Welcome to the Follow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:53 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 29th. Well, gold today was up $7.73, and that's extending the breakout from a one-month range to reconfirm the bullish environment that's been in evidence really since the middle of August. And we can also see from this advance that it began in August following that little acceleration on the downside, and the subsequent range, a clear upper dynamic in October, subsequent range, another breakout in December, nice advance through December, a modest range in January. We've got ranges now one step above another, and this is the latest breakout, and all of this is occurring within the context of a range that has been developing for nearly 3 years. And I think there's going to be some debate about whether $1,380 is the upper side of the range or $1,400. If one is really going to hew to the $1,380 area, well, that's been an area of resistance since 2016. That is obviously going to be an area where some people will begin to think about taking some money off the table. So that's also when I think it's quite likely gold is going to get there, but it will then have a somewhat overbought condition. So I think it is likely we're going to get some consolidation before we get a breakout. But of course, there is one big reason why people are owning gold, and it's because the rise of populism is a global phenomenon, and the universal answer that we've seen from governments has been to print more money. And the fiscal stimulus is being dressed as the new term for deficit spending. In other words, spending money you haven't got, that's increasing debt loads, and the ultimate result will be to debase currencies, and therefore gold is a supply and elasticity trade because you can't simply lend it into existence. And that is one of the reasons why gold prices are doing better here. What I think is quite interesting is that if we look at the gold miners, they bottomed in September. And they are now also breaking on the upside from the most recent range. But gold prices have been leading the gold shares by approximately a month since the low in August. And that remains very much the case. But gold miners are comparatively cheap relative to the gold price. That when we look at the all-in production costs for a significant number of the gold miners, it's in the order of $800 to $850, and gold prices are north of $1,300, so that's a very comfortable position for the gold miners. The big question, and it has been the big question for gold mining investors over the course of the last decade, has been, are they going to spend that largesse, that windfall, on new projects? If they can control spending, then gold miners are going to be a very attractive asset class. If they go overboard on spending, like they did in the last bull market, then they are not going to be able to keep pace with any kind of advance that we do see in gold. I think it's also worth looking at the Dow gold ratio, because gold prices doing better here, that has created at least a near-term peak for the ratio. And that ratio has been marching higher in a very persistent manner since 2011, when gold prices peaked in absolute terms. And there is the potential here that we're going to see a further period of outperformance by gold relative to stocks. And that's particularly the case if governments continue to engage in deficit spending. Then, of course, we have the Federal Reserve meeting tomorrow. And the S&P 500 has paused over the last week. It's right in the region of the trend mean. And below it, there is a short-term overbought condition. And we have now got the short-term and indeed long-term stochastics starting to roll over. Well, this is a natural area where we could anticipate some pause and consolidation. And given the magnitude of the advance and the fact that it is now back inside the overhead trading range, the big question is how much of this advance is it going to hold, or is it going to be able to sustain a move above the trend mean before we see a meaningful consolidation? The sequence of higher reaction lows off the Boxing Day rally is very much still in evidence, and I tend to think that it is quite likely we're going to see a higher reaction low here. But of course, the big question is going to be about liquidity. And the Federal Reserve is apparently walking back on its commitment to reduce the size of its balance sheet. We've seen evidence of that yesterday. And the market will be looking for confirmation of that at tomorrow's post-meeting press conference at the Fed. So I think it is likely we're going to have some volatility in here tomorrow. And I thought that the other rather important move in here today was in the industrial resources. When we look at copper, for example, it's in positive territory. It had a clear upward dynamic on Friday, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. It's at least confirming support in the region of that $2.50 area. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it is looking somewhat more encouraging. And nickel prices were up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today and have now completely unwound the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So that has clearly now broken the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, when we look at iron ore prices, because when we look at the financial media, we can see that there was that dam breach in Brazil at a Vale mine. This is the second one in the last 3.5 years. The Samarco accident has just been settled back in October, and BHP also had some exposure to that. But what it is helping to do is to highlight that the iron ore market is relatively balanced, and that there is the potential here for some additional upside. The iron ore price that we have in the chart library is only updated once a week, but it has a wedging characteristic since the beginning of 2017. There are a sequence of lower rally highs and higher reaction lows. Generally speaking, when you get a breakout, it tends to, from that kind of trading, then it does tend to be rather explosive. So that's something to potentially bear in mind when we see that shares like Rio Tinto are pushing on to new recovery highs and clearing the 4,000p level. And then in Australia, Fortescue Metals has rallied over the last 3 weeks to pull away from the region of the trend mean and very clearly break what was a 2-year sequence of lower rally highs. So yes, there is a short-term overbought condition, but this is the most bullish action we've seen for the share in years. And what that is clearly starting to suggest is that there is likely to be demand for industrial resources. Something over the weekend that we saw, for example, was that Saudi Arabia is talking about spending upwards of $475 billion over the next 10 years on infrastructure. And that's a lot of cement, a lot of steel, and a lot of copper for electricity wires. So that is a massive source of additional demand. Then, of course, you have India, which has no choice but to industrialize. When you've got 600 million people under the age of 25, then it is a not inconsiderable challenge to find jobs for them. So India has got to get in on the act in terms of global manufacturing. Now, the Nifty index today was pretty much unchanged, and it's been pulling back over the last 2 days. But the much bigger question is it going to continue to hold that 10,000 level? Of course, in ASEAN, we have elections coming up this year. That's certainly true in India. It's also true in Indonesia. And the Indonesian market was also in somewhat softer territory in here today. The A-share index was off its lows in here. So Not only do we have the Federal Reserve speaking tomorrow, but we also have Liu He in Washington today to talk about trade negotiations. So these are negotiations between pretty senior officials in both governments. I think it is perhaps too much to hope that China is going to embrace better governance and become more friendly towards US interests. But I think it is likely that they are going to commit to additional talks, and it would probably be unreasonable to raise tariffs against a background where they're still talking. So I think that is perhaps the most likely scenario. And that's going to be particularly interesting for the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index. It's exposed both to Chinese demand, but also relies on manufacturing in the Far East, and that's particularly going on in Taiwan, South Korea, and in China. So the upshot of what occurs in those talks is going to be reflected by investors in this index, and it has type 2 top formation with right-hand extension characteristics. So it has a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. So there is, I think, the potential that we are going to have some additional volatility over the course of the next few days. Volatility, like the VIX, has pulled all the way back to the lower side of its range since October. It has not sustained a move below 15, and I think that a sustained move back below 15 is a rather unlikely prospect. It generally takes quite a long time for volatility metrics to contract, and if we look at it on the weekly basis, well, we can see that there has been an uptrend over the course of the last few months in volatility, and it has been bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Well, what that suggests to me, at least, is that we're probably going to get an uptick in volatility just because we've had such an impressive rebound, and that it's time for at least some pause and consolidation. There are definitely going to be people that are tightening stops when the market has been going sideways. Well, if we know that just on an intuitive basis, we also know that there are going to be algorithmic traders that have programmed that kind of activity into their robots, and that there is the potential here that we're going to see some stops trying to be pressured. So a lot is going to hinge on what happens in terms of the trade war and what happens in terms of the Federal Reserve. There is a clear potential that the Federal Reserve has blinked. And if that's the case, then the likelihood of an interest rate hike this year is receding rather rapidly. And then you have the potential that they are going to moderate the pace with which they are reducing the size of the balance sheet. And if we look at that trend, it has in fact been picking up pace over the course of the last 6 months as they've been ratcheting up their sales of and refusal to reinvest the capital from maturing bonds as well as sales. Well, when we look at 10-year treasuries, then the price was in positive territory in here today. So that is suggesting there is continued demand for bonds. Of course, one of the primary sources of demand for bonds is from pension funds, and because we have increasing numbers of baby boomers retiring, well, it's almost a lockstep move for pension funds that once somebody hits 65, that they de-risk the portfolio and they start to move the assets into bonds with relatively long-dated maturities so that they can match their liabilities with the call on the capital over a reasonably long period of time. Well, that's a significant source of demand for treasuries against a background where we have an awful lot of treasuries being issued. So There is, when we look simply at the chart and try to strip away the arguments, 121 was an area of resistance all the way through 2018, and we have increasing evidence over the course of the last 2 weeks that it is now an area of support. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, this has been the most impressive rally we've seen for bond prices since at least 2016. So this is looking like an increasingly bullish environment for government bond prices. And so far, if we look at it the other way around in terms of the 10-year yield, then the price has not sustained a move back above the trend mean, and it was in negative territory in here today. So this is further evidence that it's unlikely the Federal Reserve is going to be raising interest rates. The bond market has pretty much priced out that eventuality. And when we look at the 2-year yield, which had been perhaps the most consistent of trends all the way through the end of 2017 through to the end of 2018, it's right now in the region of the trend mean. So this is a rather key level. If the 2.6% level fails, then we have a completed medium-term top formation for the 2-year. And what that would suggest is that there is a significant likelihood that we're going to see lower yields, higher prices, and that is the bond market voting that we're going to have slower growth, that the likelihood of additional interest rate hikes is taken off the table, and potentially even we're going to have interest rate cuts. Well, when we look at that Morgan Stanley implied number of rate hikes index, it's back above zero. So that is no longer pricing in the potential for a rate cut next at the beginning of next year, but neither is it pricing in any potential for an interest rate hike. When we look at the total return on the 10-year Treasury futures as if you were rolling them forward, well, we've had a meaningful rally. So this is the most bullish action and the strongest rally we've seen in the total return for bonds since at least the beginning of 2016, and it's probably a bit bigger than that. And that is further evidence of continued demand for fixed income securities. If there is less likelihood of of interest rate hikes and government bond yields are contracting, that's reasonably good news for the corporate sector. But high yield spreads have not yet pulled back below the trend mean, and there is this potential here that the market is going to have indigestion. The one factor that does not seem to be appreciated by the market in bonds right now is that we have a substantial quantity of investment grade debt that is going to be up for renewal or for refinancing this year. The Treasury is going to be issuing a great deal of additional debt. The Federal Reserve has got lots of maturing debt that needs that they're going to be reinvesting, and the Treasury has is going to be refinancing that debt. So we have a lot of debt issuance that's going to be coming this year, and generally speaking, the government is where the first lien is going to be. That people are probably going to want to get some security against a background where we have some uncertainty in the big issuing part of the corporate sector. I think it's particularly interesting to keep an eye on high yield ETFs. And we continue to see that there has been a pause in the high yield ETF in the region of the trend mean. This is further evidence that high yield does tend to trade like equities. So I think that's certainly worth bearing in mind. Whereas when we look at investment grade debt, it has now broken back above the trend mean. So we've seen a lot of bad news priced in, but there is certainly this conclusion among investors that we have seen potentially the worst. And that is this so far is reasonably good bullish action. And as long as these indices are holding their moves above the trend mean and further breaking sequences of lower rally highs, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from this action we're seeing in the government bond markets, and indeed in the corporate bond markets. Of course, everything is going to hinge on how well the S&P 500 can hold its gains, and that is going to be contingent on exactly what happens with the Fed, what happens with the trade wars, and indeed what happens with earnings. And so far, earnings have been reasonably positive as they've been coming through. There is the additional point, of course, that if we look at gold and we look at industrial resources and we look at biotechnology, well, what we are starting to see has been that cyclical sectors are turning back to positions of outperformance. That gels very neatly with the contention that we are in the latter stages of this bull market, and it is exactly the time when you would anticipate that cyclicals should be doing well. So that I think is a strong vote in favor of the potential for the resources sector in particular to outperform. And that's also potentially why why oil prices were stronger in here today, up by about a dollar, and so far holding this range reasonably admirably. Then, when we look at what's going on in the UK, the votes about which amendments to pursue have just about ended in London now, and the pound is down about 87 ticks versus the dollar. It's right at the upper side of the range that's been going on for the last 6 months. And Theresa May is going to be going back to Brussels and looking for a better deal on the Irish backstop. What is very ironic is that that is the one issue where the Europeans have said they're not willing to negotiate. So that is holding out the prospect of a no deal scenario, but perhaps more realistically, it means that she now has the rationale for looking for an extension, because obviously more time is going to be required to figure this issue out. Generally, that what that suggests is that that should be positive for the pound, and it is overbought in the short term, so we are likely to get a little bit of consolidation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.